Hello and welcome to episode one of a brand new series on my channel that I'm going to simply be calling Ascension. And this series is going to be a place where I get to answer your questions every week on all things pertaining to the process of spiritual ascension. I receive a ton of questions from you guys every week across email, social media, YouTube, and so forth. And obviously I can't answer everyone's questions every week, but I wanted to create a space where I can at least answer a few questions a week that I feel are the most sort of central to the process of spiritual ascension that can be of most benefit to everyone. And so I want to begin this week with a question that came through on Instagram. And by the way, I'm going to be posting every week on my story on Instagram, a little submission form where you can enter your questions for this weekly series. So if you want to enter your own questions, make sure you're watching my Instagram stories and you'll see the post once per week where you can submit those questions there. So this question comes from Instagram user at Tony Loud, who says, "How do I go beyond the huge fear that arises when approaching oneness and losing my sense of self?" So this is a very common fear on the ascension path, and I would even say probably an archetypal fear that every single one of us will have to overcome at some point. And I think that this fear tends to get exacerbated by hearing stories of other people's awakenings and trying to cross-compare our own process. You know, whether it's Ramana Maharshi or Eckhart Tolle or Byron Katie, we hear about some rare beings who have very sudden realizations that leave them in a kind of disoriented state for a long period of time. And so we start to fear, oh no, is that going to happen to me? If I start to become enlightened, I don't know if I want to be, you know, sitting on a park bench like Eckhart Tolle did for 2 years and just watching the ducks. Like, that sounds like a boring life. So we have to confront this fear, right? And kind of expose the silliness of it, because I think it's really due to these cases of disorientation due to sudden enlightenment that many seekers on this path come to this fear of the very goal that they seek. And this fear of sort of disappearing into the universe through the process of ego death, again, is a fear that we all must overcome as the ego is gradually transcended. And so it's not actually enlightenment that anyone has to be afraid of, but the idea that enlightenment means sort of the erasure of self. And if this fear isn't recognized within us and overcome, then it will remain a permanent obstacle to enlightenment until it's overcome. And so the only way to really overcome this fear of enlightenment, as far as I'm concerned, is to scrutinize and investigate it closely and methodically until it can be clearly seen to have no truth or substance to it. So we need to make an investigation, is what I'm saying. And I want to do that together in this video. So in talking about the fear of enlightenment, there's really two different fears kind of combined in that fear. And the questioner again said, "How do I get beyond the fear that arises of losing my sense of self?" So I think this again is a twofold fear. Number one, fearing that we will feel estranged or separate from others, which does begin to happen, right? As we awaken in consciousness, we see that most people are still very unawakened in consciousness. And so we feel sort of isolated and lonely, and the fear can then arise, oh, is this just going to increase the more enlightened I become? Am I going to feel more and more separate and estranged from people? The belief in separation is sort of like the ego's religion. And so it preaches this false gospel to us at every possible turn. And when it comes to enlightenment, the ego will sort of whisper these thoughts to us. I don't know, this could be very bad. If your sense of self disappears, you won't be able to relate to people anymore. You know, you're going to feel like alone in a black and white world that's lost all of its color, and you can't really touch anything anymore. It all feels fake and dreamlike to you, and you'll be lost in a world full of unenlightened people. And so, you know, who wants to live like that? What a dreadful existence that would be. And so these thoughts are common, of course, and inevitable, actually. But let's have a real look at the upside down logic here that the ego is presenting. which is really the idea that enlightenment leads to separation, isn't it? And how could that possibly be true? The idea that you would feel separate and alone in your enlightened state would clearly imply that you're not actually enlightened yet, right? Because enlightenment is the state of perfect unity. So let's look at an analogy that will help us glimpse, and I emphasize glimpse, what the enlightened state feels like in comparison to others who, from their own perspective, are not at that stage with us yet. Think of the example or the analogy of watching children or chaperoning children at a playground or something. So it's true that, you know, while the children are running around playing childlike games, imaginary games, you're watching them with disinterest in the game, but much interest in, you know, the beings themselves. And so while you're not relating to the imaginary games that they're playing, that doesn't cause you to feel separate and alone, right? While you're chaperoning the children. In fact, you feel very much warm inside while you watch the children play because you recognize, yeah, I was once a child who played imaginary games like this. This is appropriate for children. And so just as watching children play imaginary games doesn't make you feel separate from them, neither will the enlightened state make you feel separate from the unenlightened, meaning there is the recognition of sameness and shared being with everyone. That's the illuminated state. There is the natural, intuitive understanding that at the core of every person, there is enlightenment there, just waiting to be discovered. Just like at the core of every child is an adult waiting to be discovered, right? A child is just an adult at a preliminary stage of adulthood. They're growing into their adulthood. So in illuminated awareness, we see everyone like that. Just like children growing up, they're just at a stage of their evolutionary journey. But that truth that you've discovered in yourself is just as much present in them. And in fact, you very much see it in them, even though they may be overlooking it. And I believe this is what the Buddha was pointing to when he famously said, "When I awakened, the whole world awakened with me." So there's an analogy for you of why you don't need to fear feeling separate from people by becoming enlightened. But let's look now at the more important fear, which is behind that, which is the fear of separation from self. Now, it's certainly true to say that your sense of being a separate individual does dissolve along the enlightenment path, but to say that you have no sense of self remaining is not the case. In fact, quite the opposite. We could say that although the sense of separation dissolves, there's no sense of loss when that personal self is transcended, but rather there's actually a feeling of expansion. Our sense of self moves from the personal to the universal. And so the person that we once thought we were is also included in the universal self. It's just not the entirety of what we are. So it's not that there's this denial of the person. Oh, the person's dream, forget it. Not adequate, not appropriate, not valid. We don't feel that way. It's much the opposite. It's, this person is a beautiful expression of the one universal self that I am. And so you can enjoy this expression, and in fact, you will continue to refine the authenticity of this person's expression, but from a totally impersonal place. So let's take this analogy very loosely, but suppose I'm identified as my right hand, and I don't even pay attention to any other part of the body, just I am the right hand. I am this hand. This hand is I. And so my right hand tries to do everything that the body wants to do. And this is a very dysfunctional way to live, isn't it? So if I live with the belief I am the hand, I will believe that the hand is performing all the actions by itself, right? But let's suppose that a sage sees my predicament and approaches me and says, my friend, I see why you are suffering so much. You must transcend your hand. Now, since I'm identified as my hand, this would be felt as a very threatening statement, wouldn't it? I would think to myself, transcend my hand? Why would I want to do that? I don't want to get rid of my hand and lose my hand. I'll never be able to do anything ever again. But in actuality, the direction given was not to get rid of my hand, but to transcend it. Meaning what? Transcend your identification with it. And those are not the same things at all, right? Just to transcend my identification with my hand doesn't mean I get rid of the hand. I don't chop it off. It still exists. But now it exists in a state of unity and relationship and balance with the whole body. And I begin to realize, oh, I am the whole self. I am the whole body. The whole body is I. And so the hand has its place because the hand is included in the body, but it no longer tries to run the show and, you know, flying around all the time doing everything, but it can sit quietly in my lap until I need to use it for something. And then when I don't need to use it, I put it down. This is what the ego mind, the personal mind becomes like. We can still make use of the mind, very much so, through thought and through thinking, but only when necessary. And when we don't need to think about anything, the mind isn't jumping around in the background making all kinds of noise, because we're no longer identified with the mind. We're no longer identified with all the thoughts that appear. We just watch them. And the ones that are useful, we say, ah, thank you, mind, for reminding me to take out the trash or send those emails. I don't know. But when I don't need to think, or when there's an unnecessary thought, we just say, oh, no, thank you, mind. Not interested. And that's the practice, right? That dissolves our identification with it. The ego only survives as long as we have use for it. So as our sense of self continues to expand beyond the body, we don't start to think that we're everything. We actually intuitively feel that we are everything. And let me make this point very clear here. You will not feel this fear, Tony, when you experience yourself as one with everything. You will only experience fear when you just have the idea, I am one with everything. The ego will use every concept that you have learned but have not integrated. It will weaponize it against you and use it to torment you, such as fear of oneness. And so when you've come to know yourself only as a physical body, thinking thoughts, then this is all you're going to feel yourself to be, right? Because that's where your identity is. But when you begin to know yourself as pure being, pure consciousness, then you will easily recognize that being and consciousness is everywhere, is everything. It's a very natural, simple recognition. It's not some mind-blowing psychedelic experience, although it can be like that if you take a psychedelic and you haven't really glimpsed oneness before. You know, we've all had that experience probably, that oneness just can blow the doors off of our awareness. It's so incredible. But when we integrate it as an abiding state, it doesn't appear as this mind-blowing epiphany that we're always realizing. It becomes as natural as separation once was. It's like, oh yeah, I've been dreaming of a universe that doesn't exist. I've been dreaming of separation when oneness is the only truth. So here's another important point. You only fear losing the ego because you don't know what the ego is. You think that the ego is you. And so you say, I'm afraid of losing myself in oneness. But make no mistake, this is the ego's fear, not your own. This is why I emphasize over and over again on many of my videos, certainly in 4D University. If you're in 4DU or if you join, you'll see we emphasize the practicing of these three beliefs, the three beliefs of ego, as the most important staple spiritual practice before we can really enter the awareness of oneness and abide there permanently. Because the ego doesn't exist as an entity. It's not an actual being living in the skull somewhere that's causing us to see separation, right? It's actually just three beliefs. And really, it's the belief in separation, right? The one false belief. But we can't really say, hey, transcend separation and realize oneness. Because all the mind knows is separation. it's too pervasive, right? It's too foundational to the ego's thought system. And so it feels too challenging to just say, realize that separation's false and oneness is the truth. So instead we can say, well, what are the ways that separation shows up as a belief system in my mind? And of course, it's the three beliefs: the belief in lack, the belief in external fulfillment, attachment to outcomes, and control or personal doership. These are the three ways that separation acts itself out through our body mind. So why not just dissolve the belief in separation? Because it's too big of a task for most seekers at the beginning of their journey. Instead, we can sort of simplify it down to, you know, the lowest common denominator, which is the three negative emotions: sadness, anger, and fear. We all suffer from the same three beliefs, right? We suffer because we're sad in some way, angry in some way, or afraid in some way. And those three emotions are linked to the three beliefs. Sadness signals that I am believing that I am lacking something. Anger signals that I am attached to an outcome that I think is going to fulfill me. And if something ever gets in the way of my outcome, anger is going to be the result. So anger signals an attachment to an outcome. And then likewise, fear, you know, anxiety, stress, worry, paranoia, these emotions of fear signal that I think that I'm in control of life and it's slipping through my fingers, or I'm losing control, therefore panic, anxiety, stress. And so we have to see these three beliefs at work in real time and begin correcting them. And to me, that's the preliminary step to being able to abide in the awareness of oneness. Scrutinize and investigate these beliefs constantly until they stop arising. This is the process of ego death, right? That the wandering ego mind just gradually loses energy when it's subjected to constant scrutiny. Meaning, when you stop just believing all the ego's thoughts, the ego is a bunch of ideas auditioning for your attention, right? They come on the stage, they do their song and dance. Do you want to think about me? And you're there in the audience as pure awareness watching, and you're selecting and employing these thoughts that are auditioning. So instead of doing that, we have to do something else, right? We have to change our relationship to the ego's thoughts. So where in the past we've just been identified, yep, every thought, that's my thought, I'm thinking that. And so there's identity being infused to every thought. Well, that's a big problem, because the thoughts that are painful and contain suffering within them are being energized by our identity and our attention. So the only way out of that predicament is to do the reverse, to stop identifying with our thoughts, to watch them, right, doing their song and dance on the stage, and just let them exhaust themselves. Let them run out of energy doing their tap dance routine, and eventually they're going to exit stage left because you're not endowing them with your energy anymore. And so as you practice this, and as you abide more and more in that awareness of oneness, you gain more energy to resist and to challenge those thoughts of separation, those three beliefs. And so as you withdraw your attention from them, and as you continue practicing the awareness of oneness, the remembrance of oneness, the habit of seeing separation in your experience will gradually dissipate until it disappears. So with all that being said, this sort of brings us back full circle to the fundamental paradox of enlightenment, which was very much inherent in your question, Tony. And I like to call this paradox of enlightenment the divine riddle, because it's as if God placed a divine riddle within our heart. And if you can solve this riddle, you attain the answer, which we call enlightenment. And that is that, you know, how can someone realize what's already true? Or put a different way, how can we be on a journey towards where we already are? Right? If enlightenment's already the truth of us, How can it be realized? And so that's why we often use the analogy of waking up from a dream. This paradox is only solved by abiding in the awareness of oneness, you know, abiding in the I am. And then through that practice, the riddle will solve itself through our direct experience of reality. So not a mental conclusion, but a heart-based conviction that we find within us that reality is one. There is no separation in oneness, period. It is a metaphysical fact. And so canceling these three beliefs from your mind will reveal this reality to you very plainly. And so we could also say that as long as the reality of oneness feels difficult to see, then we can be sure that we still have strong belief in the ego's thought system of separation, right? We're still believing in these three beliefs, and we need to scrutinize and investigate them. Because this thought system of separation only consists of the belief in lack, attachment to outcomes, and control. These are the only three reasons you are convinced that you exist separate and apart from your source. And so by dissolving them, you will recognize your oneness with all, like an infant recognizes her mother's face, right? It's natural. Ah, that's my source. So let's look at this analogy as well. Do you lose your sense of self when you awaken in the morning from your dreams? Or does your sense of self actually expand when you awaken? If you have practiced the art of lucid dreaming, you have a big leg up in understanding this analogy. But even if you haven't practiced lucid dreaming, this analogy is still very useful. We can say that if you are interested in this content, and clearly you are because you're listening to this video, that represents you becoming lucid in the dream. So when you're practicing lucid dreaming at night, one of the, you know, kind of principal techniques is to fall asleep repeating things like, I am awake in the dream, or I realize I am dreaming, I realize I'm dreaming. And you repeat those mantras as you fall asleep so that hopefully in your dream state, your dream character starts to say, I'm awake in a dream, I'm awake in a dream. And then you become lucid. The more your waking state enters your dream state, the more lucid you are. And so that's all that's happening right now as you watch this video in this dream of separation, is that as these concepts enter your mind and they resonate with you and you repeat them, oneness is all that there is. Reality is one. I am awake in reality. You're becoming lucid. So just your interest in spiritual growth shows that you're becoming lucid already. But enlightenment is to be fully awake in the dream. And so I want to put an emphasis on this point here that oneness is our waking state. Separation is the dream state. And the ego flips it around, right? It's as if separation is reality, I'm living in reality, and all these spiritual teachers and all these spiritual texts keep telling me to realize oneness. So we try to realize oneness like oneness is a dream we have to invent and imagine and pretend is there. And then eventually enter that dream and live in that dream. While everyone else is in the reality of separation, we can escape that horrible reality through the dream of oneness. We have to invert this belief on its face. Oneness is the waking state, and separation is the dream state. And so this is why I love the use of mantras, such as A Course in Miracles gives, or many of the ones that I like to use, because they serve as those wake-up calls to sort of knock on the door of our spiritual heart center and say, it's time to wake up. I am awake and aware in reality itself. I am free right now in heavenly reality. To realize it, I have to turn my whole attention to it, right? Just like in a lucid dream, if I want to leave the dream state, I have to place all my attention and awareness on the waking state. And my attention upon my waking state will awaken me from the dream. And that's all we're doing on this journey we call enlightenment, which is really already the fact of who we are. But are you awake to that reality?